Sometimes you start off interviewing someone and you stumble across a story that is much, much more important than the one you thought you were going to hear. This is a very special episode because it talks about a lot more than just being a performer. Let's go and talk to the very, very talented Mr. Jeremy Pei.
I saw you in Singapore, it's almost 20 years ago now when I first saw you.
Yeah, I think so.
And you were doing these amazing magic shows, and then you learned to be an amazing juggler.
Well, not as amazing as you. I'm not juggling much nowadays already.
You were in one of my school shows. You were in my Danger Brothers Family Circus, and you did one act was the Magic Linking Rings.
I did quite a few of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you did one act was juggling. And I remember there was a competition, a juggling competition at the Singapore River, and you won it, didn't you?
Oh!
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, this guy's bucking.
And there's a dog! Hello!
His name is Vegas.
Hello, Vegas.
Vegas.
That's a good name for a magic dog.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Oh, it's really
thanks for reminding me. Yeah, I think that time the Club Key won, I was a bit lucky. I think at that time, still nobody juggled four clubs, right?
Yeah.
Now we have some new jugglers that can do fives and all, like,
yeah.
I can't do anymore.
Yeah, well, you were definitely the best there. You were so stylish and so slick. It was very good to watch. Before we get started, how can people find you online? Is it www.jeremypei.com? Is that the best?
Honestly speaking, if you go jeremypei.com, it is just an info site.
Right.
Info site. Actually, there are a lot of changes in my show business and everything over the past, I think, 3-4 years. You know my situation.
Right? I do. I'm going to talk about
it. So, I'm a bit semi-retired.
Yeah.
So, the most current information they want is go to my Facebook page, which I actually have an official website address called www.thesocialmagician.com. So, basically, that links to facebook.com/JeremyPei.
Yeah.
So, it's basically the Facebook page. It shows current things, whether I'm performing on stage, or I'm off stage, or some scenes, or backstage.
Yes. Yeah. And just so people are listening, are you happy to talk about your surgery later on in this interview?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. I talk about this even in the news of Singapore. The title says, "This magician cheats death twice."
Good one. Oh, yes, because the car crashed as well.
Yeah, car crash. Then after that, the surgery was quite a risky surgery, I was told. The risk of me losing the right half of my body, as well as I can't talk.
Okay.
So, before doing this, I did a lot of things before.
Before that. Yeah, so we are going to get onto that. So people who are listening who don't know you will be like, what on earth are we talking about? And we will get onto that soon.
Sure.
Okay, let's get started at the beginning of your life and career. At a very...
Sure.
Okay, well, this isn't quite the beginning, actually. But at a very young age, you put on a solo show at Jubilee Hall in Raffles Hotel.
Yep.
So how did you go on about... How did you go about putting on your own solo show?
You know, when I did that show, I was actually, it was in 2004. I wanted to do the show in the month of February.
Yeah.
Meaning to say, I only have like, the day of the show is 22nd of June, 2014. Because on the 24th of June, I enter the army.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
is that national service?
Yeah, national service. Yeah. So what happened is I was thinking, oh, maybe I want to do a theater show. And I want to do it before I enter the army. So I set the date. And in the past, there used to be a ticketing book. I forgot a ticket charge or something. I couldn't remember exact. So I actually wrote up the whole proposal for myself that I should. I need a team like this and everything. So it was just a personal goal in mind. Like, it wasn't meant for profiting. It wasn't meant for what. Yeah, so I'm glad I could do that. And there was a very interesting thing that happened after the show, because my mom and dad, they were in front. And my dad had a stroke when he was... in fact, my dad already had a stroke. But the serious stroke happens on 2015, January.
Oh, no.
So in June of 2014, he was there in the audience, front row, of course, with my mom.
Mm.
And after the show, they all go to my dad and say, oh, wow, you must have taught your son so much magic that he can put up a show like this. And my dad is shouting at them and saying, no, I didn't contribute anything.
Wow.
My dad didn't give me anything. No, didn't. My dad didn't actually encourage me to be a performing magician.
Again, we're going to go into this soon. Your people who don't know you, your father was a great magician as well, wasn't he?
For him, he runs up his business. Magic is his passion, so he's just more. He contributes to charity and performing, and he also, especially Magic Club, he was very supportive in Magic Clubs. Mm. Yeah, we the Singapore Association of Magicians and all. So in the past, he used to every year have an annual show. So my dad always performed the Big Illusions. But honestly speaking, I don't stay at my old. Have you been to my home in the past?
I don't think I have.
My old. Yeah, the bungalow. Now I'm here. I'm in a HDB flat, which is a lot better, easier to clean. And just that my props are all more bulky in my room now instead of having warehouse.
Oh, it's just the same as me.
It's one my office room. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just showing Jeremy a photo, a video of my room. It's pretty similar to yours, full of props.
Yeah, correct. No, not just this. Actually, in my living room, I have a stage. A mini stage, and I have a showroom. I have a new. There's this thing that I wanted to do. I'm thinking if you can check out 60yearoldmagician.com. 60-year-old means to say that the day I turn 30. Okay, and in fact, I do you know this? I turn 33 tomorrow.
Wow! Brilliant! Congratulations.
Yeah, 12 of October. Yes.
Wow.
So,
happy birthday tomorrow.
Oh, thank you. when I was turned 30th, I had a website. Called 60-year-old
Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah, to explain to people the way I think now I live, because if I don't do the surgery, I know how many years I have left.
Mm.
So I'm thinking, what should I be doing if I'm retired, if I'm old? Yeah. So the thing was, I'm thankful now that now I can still talk, okay, the fact. So now I'm sharing other things that happen in life and all. It's more of like a motivational site. And there is a movie, a short film of 10 minutes, 30 seconds, that was done just before the surgery. I'm saying the real main surgery.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the stage act you certainly used to do a lot of. You have a very dynamic linking ring routine.
Oh.
You have... candles manipulation, I remember.
Oh, you're talking about the competition act.
Kane's production. Do you have a favourite piece of magic that you like to perform on stage?
Favourite piece of magic? Honestly, magic is it's my favourite thing.
Ooh,
I like
it.
All the magic things I perform. But honestly speaking, it's to each his own. Not everybody would like that act. And also, very interesting thing was this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in fact, in Shanghai, I did this as well. When back then in 1999, okay, my competition, what you're describing is like my competition act. I opened with a rope routine, and the rope routine is ever since the year 2010. It's a magic product, not my magic product, but it's a product under a company in China.
Yeah.
Now thousands have sold worldwide. In the past, before 2010, I it's also a magic product, but I make it myself.
Right.
Yeah. That rope routine is called the Eternal Ropes. But with that rope, you can do many, many routines. So I've done that on Taiwan television, Japanese television, Malaysian television, China television. But I don't know why they want that rope routine. Because and I competed in, we have this Olympics in magic called FISM. Mm. Yeah, I did that and one more routine, which is called the Love Story. That was what I did for FISM. But back in then, when I was in Australia in 1999, when I was 14 years old, and in Hong Kong, I competed with at China, Guilin City. I did the rope and I did the rings, my rings routine. Now, these two are published products.
Mm.
My rings in the past, I have redefined rings, stainless steel rings, which my company made. There's a lot of stories just about these rings because the way we manufacture them and assemble them. But now it's also all sold to this company called Tieli in China.
Mm.
They are the one producing my products. You should check out the promotional video of the rings because that was a short film. Really, it's a short film that we filmed in China when I was there. So, and what's the reason for me to be sharing magic and not all magicians want to share magic? Because seriously, the risk of me waking up not able to talk and half body not moving, there was this risk. We had to sign the contract before surgery. I just want to record as much of my brain down as I can.
Yeah.
Now my memory is quite bad. You see, I'm not sure you can see. Yeah, here there's one line here.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was where they cut, and then now this part is empty.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna change the order of my interview. This is I think people have to know what's going on. People can't see, but yes, on a video you can see a scar, and I've got a scar here.
There's a bright thing. Oh, you had a scar or something?
I've got a scar here. Do you know my history?
No, I don't know.
I had a brain tumor. Okay, here we go. Let me just shuffle my questions. Okay, hang on a second. Okay. There we go. Okay. In 1986, I had a brain tumor.
Wow. Were you a kid back then?
Yeah, I was 15 years old.
Oh.
And it changed my life. It really did. In many ways, in good ways, because it made me just realize how precious life is and how you know.
Correct.
No matter how bad things are on a day-to-day basis, the fact that you're able to go out and do things is fantastic. It's when I was sick in hospital, the idea that I could just go out and just do whatever, just live a normal life, that is the goal. And if you've got that, then nothing else really matters. Yeah, the cliche is if you've got your health, that's the most important thing. And
yeah,
it changed me a lot. So.
I agree.
So you didn't know I had a brain tumour?
No, I didn't know, but when you had it, what was the stage at?
Okay, and so I was only 15 years old, so I don't remember a lot about it. But this is what happened for me. I was 15 years old, and I had massive, massive headaches and double vision, and then they went away. Then a few weeks later, they came on again, massive, massive headaches, double vision, and it wouldn't stop. So the doctor said, okay, we better give you a CT scan in those days, a CAT scan. And they scanned me and they said, oh, there's a big tumour in your pineal gland of your brain. So we've got to find out what it is.
Did a biopsy?
They did lots of biopsies and tests, taking blood samples. No, not biopsy. I think it was tested with
blood test,
yeah. And they put a shunt. That's what my scar is in my head. There's a shunt. There's a tube that goes... Do you know what a shunt is?
A shunt,
okay. No. So for my brain tumour, it was causing so much pressure in my brain, that was what was causing the headaches and the physical pain. So a shunt is a tube that just drains off the brain fluid. And you can still see a tube in my, like a vein here, I don't know if you can see it. There's a tube, plastic tube, it's still there.
Wow.
And luckily, they found that after a week or so, the test came back, and my tumour could be treated fairly successfully with just radiotherapy, which is, like, as you know, not quite as demanding as chemotherapy or as surgery. So I ended up missing almost a year of school. All my hair fell out. I was very, very sick. But here I am 30 years later.
Yeah.
And hasn't come back. And yeah,
you didn't have to do any checks, regular checks, and all.
After the tumor, luckily my tumor was benign, and it wasn't the kind that comes back normally. Of course, they checked every week for a blood test for about a year or a couple of years, and then they said, "That's it, you're dismissed. It's very, very, very unlikely that it will come back." So 30 years later, here I am, and
that's great.
And as I say, yeah, it is quite life changing. Because you don't realize when you're 15 years old how fragile life is.
For my age, I'm not saying I'm very old at that young age. I was so focused on magic as number one and all.
Exactly.
Now for me, family is number one. I want to spend more time with family and all. Because the thing about my mom is the one suffering the most. Because the fact that my dad, 7 years stroke before he passed away.
Oh, yeah.
Then right after that, the next year, I wanted to marry my wife, we proposed and all, but in between, I got hit by a truck, entered the hospital, then after they cured me, because there was a huge hit, but I'm very blessed to read the fact that, I mean, one piece, my props, my car
I've seen the photograph online, I think it must have been on your blog, the car was all smashed up, so you're in a very bad car crash.
Yeah, the thing about, I didn't feel anything, during the crash, I was being hit. It just shut down.
Yeah.
So, The fact that I say I cheated death twice. One was an accident, and the other one was the main surgery, because the main surgery that was done last year, the year before. Wait a moment. I can't remember which year. 2015.
Let's just go back. So you had the car crash,
yep.
And you recover, and then a few months later, it's the same year, yeah. Right?
A few months later,
you're diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Didn't recover. That thing, there's still something in the brain.
Yeah.
Because they are afraid of things stuck in the brain or what after doing the crash. So they are just saying it could be brain tumor.
Yeah.
Immediately they say they want to do a biopsy surgery to test. I say, wait, I don't feel brain tumor, I feel normal.
Yes.
I say, no. So I went to see 2013. I went to see so many specialists, total of 6 specialists.
Yeah.
All just say I'm paying money for them to tell me it's brain tumor.
Oh.
And a so interesting thing was, I told the doctor, I don't want to do a surgery because there is risk of me not being able to talk properly, move properly,
yes,
and everything.
Yes.
And I just thinking that I want to really learn how to enjoy life than to lay on a bed for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So like my dad. So I that's why I start to think to myself what I want to do in future, that kind of thing. Hoping to know that the passing of a brain tumor patient is actually quite peaceful.
Mm.
We won't suffer pain or we may sleep and don't wake up. Mm. That was what I was told.
Mm.
So what makes me want to do a surgery? You know what?
Why?
Seizure attack.
Oh.
You know, when it happens to me, the first seizure attack, it was, I think, July 2014.
Right.
I had that seizure attack. I'm like, what is this? Wow. Then after that, this seizure attack happens every night before I sleep.
Oh,
it
my
happens.
Goodness.
Sometimes you can count. Seizure attack is something you can count.
Yes.
So, if it happens at some... Okay, I was told by a doctor that I should not drive.
Yes.
So, in fact, I still drive. And it has happened when I'm driving too. But I can't tell my mom this because the car is mine. But
are you sure you should say this on a podcast? I guess your mom won't listen to it.
Yeah, so I didn't, don't worry, I won't listen. She won't listen English stuff. So, anyway, the thing was that the doctor has told me I shouldn't be driving.
Yeah.
The fact that I still drive myself to the hospital. So, there was also something very interesting, the fact that I was supposed to have a reservist in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
So when I told the doctor, I said, oh, they give me, government, MINDEF wants me to, for real. They say, oh, no worries, I just give you a letter. So give me a letter with 2 sentences.
Mm.
First sentence, this guy has brain tumor. Second one, he's not suitable for national service.
Yes.
And the moment I went to my division, to the medical officer's side, I gave him the letter. He like, are you okay? Are you okay? I say, oh, yeah, I'm okay. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm okay. How you got here? I said, I drove here. What, you drive? Please don't drive. And I say, what, this letter is good enough? He said, this letter. I say, but do you need any proof? He said, no worries, we're in the government. The government can provide the proof. So 1 week later, I'm now past F. Meaning to say, I don't have to serve army anymore.
Okay, F. F as in A, B, C, D, E, F.
F, yeah, yes. F. Yeah, I'm totally out. Past E are people who cannot hold guns and everything. And
right.
Yeah, but still, I'm not in army anymore. I still get this. You know this? It's $100 voucher for people who served army.
They still give you vouchers even though you didn't have to serve.
I'm not serving national service anymore. Yeah. So, I mean, without seizure attack, I believe now I would still not do surgery and all. But,
so,
I mean, luckily
Was the tumour... My tumour was growing quite rapidly in size. Your tumour wasn't growing so rapidly?
No, yeah. In fact, the tumour was growing. And then they say that if it hits stage 3, it's going to grow faster.
Right.
So the fact that the time when I do the biopsy, when I get the seizure attack, indeed, it doubled the size.
Oh,
the size of the tumour has become like 5 centimetre by 5 centimetre
yeah.
by 4 centimetre. So the doctors say that we must do a biopsy just to test.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, I'm thankful that the biopsy shows that my tumour is still stage 2.
Mm.
But when I do the surgery, when they test the tumour, they found stage 3 cells also. So they are worried about, because the thing is, if you didn't take out anything, you can't test what's inside the stage.
Yeah,
it has
yeah.
to be taken out.
Yes.
And I'm also thankful that during the biopsy, they took out that part, which is stage 2. Because what happened if it's stage 3, I got to go into instant surgery.
Oh.
So what happened is for the next 6 months after the biopsy, I do chemotherapy because I told them in this 6 months I want to do some things in life that I really wanted to do. I want to go back to the cities I like most in the world, Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So I went to Las Vegas. But I had to rush back from Vegas. I didn't complete my full trip because my grandmother passed away.
Oh, God.
So I rushed back just a day before the cremation.
My goodness. I want to do things.
Basically, that 6 months,
yeah,
or else seven months to be exact, because it's March all the way to October 15th. So I went to Shanghai also just to do the Happy Valley thing because the manager, they really wanted me. Or rather, the Happy Valley people, they really wanted me there. But that year, something happened. The thing about chemotherapy, it makes my... I'm very short-tempered. It's like...
Really?
If people want to offend me or what, it's... it's like the F word comes straight out of my mouth.
Chemotherapy affected you like that, huh?
Yeah, chemotherapy does affect that. It affects me being more tired for the first 14 days.
Mm.
And then the temper becomes what? Then that starts to make me realize of what things has happened during my chemotherapy period. Yeah, it's not something every day. The number of pills I have to take and all is crazy. Yeah.
God.
I'm so glad now I'm refusing pills. In fact, for the past, for this year, 2017, I didn't take any pills related to cancer. Last year, I still had to take the pills. I still had to take Keppra to prevent seizure attack. I still have to take like painkillers, tramadol, but now no pills.
I mean, it's quite a story, and it's I think until you suffer serious illness, you don't really realize how precious every moment of every day is. And I'm glad you're here and you're looking good.
Yeah, same. I'm glad to see that you're looking good too.
Yeah,
you look the same like the last time I see you.
Yeah, I'm quite old now, but yeah, I'm still.
Yeah, no, but the thing is, you look the same.
Yeah, so yeah, and for me, 30 years since the brain tumor. So yeah. Far for me, so good. Wow.
Hello, listeners. So you see what I mean? This is a very special podcast. So talking about doing shows does seem somewhat less important right now. Nevertheless, Jeremy is a phenomenal entertainer and performer. So let's talk just a little about that other side of his life, his career as a performer. Take it away, Jeremy.
What else can we talk about? Well, let's talk about some of your stage work and your shows and your performing.
Sure.
And now people will know where we're coming from. We were talking about Jubilee Hall.
Yep.
And doing a show. How did you rehearse a big stage show? Because did you hire a venue to rehearse in?
No, I used to live in a pretty big house. So
perfect.
There's a basement area where I rehearse the illusions. In fact, a lot of illusions are actually at the first floor living room as well. So I do most of my rehearsals there. In fact, there's much reason for doing that theatre show. Rarely, I think it's profit-making. It's not really meant for profit-making.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really meant for, like, milestones in life. Or sometimes it's meant for a project so that people can gather together. I actually help other magicians, rather not a lot, to produce a theatre show. In 2011, Nick has a show called Mind Magic. It's a theatre show also at Jubilee Hall. I assist in helping him to produce the show. So he can focus in performing.
Yes.
But for mine, if I'm the producer and I'm the performer and everything, I'm very thankful for the friends who really helped me. But the thing is, thinking back, I have no idea how I can do it. Now you ask me to do it, I can't.
I know, it's such a big undertaking.
It's very stressful to put up a show like this.
Yeah, to put up the show, to be the performer, the director, the producer, it's too much. It's very, very, very hard.
Yeah, do you know Lawrence and Priscilla?
I do, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I see they most recently, the Touch Community Centre?
Oh, yes, yes.
The church place. They renovated the whole place. It becomes a gateway Gateway building. Mm-hmm. In the Gateway building, in the past, the theatre is in the first floor there. Now it becomes a much, much more modern and new theatre. Wow. And recently they did this, the Nutcracker show, in terms of magic show, that links to Nutcracker is something European, he was telling me. Then, wow, it's a massive grand show and all. And when I see their production team, I'm like, wow, they are really focusing just on the performance, and the production team are helping, and so each one have their own role.
Yes.
Yeah, although Lawrence Kong is the main guy, but he still listened to the director and everything.
Yeah,
They got me there. I was there to watch every rehearsal and not just give some opinion in terms of magic and staging of magic and all. Yeah,
it's very hard to do everything yourself.
But I was really doing everything, including ticketing and everything, communication and everything. It's life experience.
Yeah. Like me, you love performing to music, or you do a lot of performing to music. Where do you get your music?
What is the reason why I use a lot of music for show?
No.
It's because I'm not so good at talking, really. In the past, when I was in teenage years, I'm not very good at talking, and I talk with some weird accent on stage.
Okay.
But now it's okay. With regards to music, honestly speaking, there are some common music that magicians use.
Yeah.
You know, like Cirque du Soleil's music.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very common thing. The most common one is Eclipse from the Whole Experience. But nowadays, I kind of feel I'm very attracted to soundtracks.
Okay.
Yeah, soundtracks, music. And in fact, now, I don't perform magic like the way I used to do. Now, if I book for corporate shows, I talk a lot more. I communicate with them a lot more. And I like to do some acts that mean something. There's something inspirational and all. So my show actually nowadays ends with something inspirational. There's a story.
There's a story.
Yeah, I actually have some soft music and I tell a story. My stories are inspirational. My stories are not sad.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, the common story would be like Snowstorm. Okay, Peck super small, can play very big. I tell a story about my dad showing me how snow is like when I was young. And then Kevin James routine basically. Mm. But I have some. But the thing is about...
For people who aren't magicians, I think you're talking about the routine where you produce confetti snow.
Yes.
And at the same time, you tell a poignant story, and normally most magicians makes it relevant to themselves and their own life.
Yeah, I do it this way instead of replicating whatever the person is saying. In fact, all my story I replicate. I like to say it's a bit of like a fictional act, but some parts are non-fiction. Yes. Some parts are really things that happen.
Biographical, autobiographical.
In fact, when I do my rings, I can use my rings to close the show, but I just give you an example of what I say when I do the rings, okay? And this is, I'm just saying that it's a non-fiction story, but some parts are fictional. So which one is fiction? You decide, okay? I say that to end the show, I want to show you something very special. It's the first trick I learned since I was a kid, okay? I say that my dad was a magician. My dad taught me this trick. I'm holding the rings. Mm-hmm. But as my dad taught me the trick, my dad taught me, tell me two things. He said, number one, Jeremy, if you want to become a good magician, you must practice.
Mm.
Yep, I've been practicing this trick for the past 30 years of my life.
Yeah.
Number two, my dad also said, Jeremy, if you want my dad also said that, Jeremy, if you want to be a good magician, you must perform it as many times as you can. So I say that I've traveled around the world to share my magic with everybody, including this, and tonight I want to specially dedicate it to all the audience. Mm. And such that when I do this talk, people, they'll kind of feel different. In fact, they clap even before the act starts.
Wow.
So, and then when I end, of course, it's fanfare music. However, this is my competition act. So when I do competition, I don't say things like that. It starts with boom, and I do the act.
The music.
So but if I do commercial and use this act to close my show, I talk this before I perform the act.
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah. So if you're doing a competition, you'll do it high tempo with the music. But also you can use it, if you stop the music and you do it with talking, you can use it as a beautiful finish for your show.
Yeah, the act is the same. It's still the fast music.
Yeah.
But before that fast music, I play an inspirational story.
Yeah, that's great.
Similarly,
I love tips. That's a really good tip.
Then I also do one, the snow is a common one. I do something with just a blooming rose bush.
Mm.
Okay, which is, the one I have is still in a flight case. I don't carry flight cases anymore now. In the past, of course, I have the van.
Mm.
And then, I sold the van. I got a car right now. It's a Honda Shuttle, Honda Fit Shuttle to be exact. It's bigger than the Honda Fit, but now I don't use flight cases anymore. So my flight cases are still here. Yeah, but now I just use luggage cases.
Yeah.
Rimowa. I'm a big Rimowa collector.
How come you've gone from flight cases to suitcases?
Okay, honestly speaking, I'll give a simple example. My head chopper with the flight case is 30 kilograms.
Ah.
Now it's a canvas case, 11 kilograms.
Oh,
it's the same
yes.
prop.
Yes.
It's the same
much
prop.
Easier to carry.
It's the same prop and all. And the thing is that I don't think I want to put flight case in my car. It would damage my car.
Yeah. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. So we were talking, we got into this because we were talking about music.
Yeah.
When I started, it was easy just to take any music you liked from anywhere and put it in your show, no one minded. Nowadays, because of the spread of the internet, musicians rightly so, that hey, you know, we need to make money. Do you have you ever had any problems with copyright issues with music in your shows?
Honestly, I never encountered that yet.
Yeah.
So, but I want to share with you something before I forget. In YouTube, there is a channel called Audio Library.
Mm.
I'm very shocked to find this. Do you know about this?
No.
Okay, just go YouTube, just search Audio Library. Audio Library. It's no copyright music. Okay.
Yeah.
It's no copyright music. And all these tracks are great for show business.
There you go. What another great tip. This is brilliant. I'll put that in the notes.
Music are nowadays available free online.
Yeah, amazing.
So I actually downloaded it a lot. In fact, I'm editing a video from my Happy Valley, like because I mean my show, I only do two shows a day. So the rest of the time I go around, I'm shooting other people, shooting around. So I'm just, in fact, it works. I did this even the last 2 years just for memory.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'm using one of their tracks too, royalty free.
Yeah, I mean there's a number of issues. There's copyright free. There's royalty free. Yeah, to get music that you can use. That's great. I'll put that in the notes, the YouTube thing there.
Yeah. So, no, I don't know whether... But apparently, when I'm telling other people, they say they know about this. But strange for me, it just so happened to work only last month that I rediscovered this. Yeah, I don't know. Then I'm thinking, why you know, you never tell me. You know it's right.
Yeah, so, I normally just type in on my search engine, copyright-free, royalty-free.
Music. And royalty-free music.
Yeah, free music.
Yeah. No, but this YouTube channel of this Audio Library,
that's great.
It's really called Audio Library - No Copyright Music.
They
have nice tracks, good for show business.
Brilliant. Hey, great. I love it. Get tips like that. How do you control your music? If you're doing a big show, you have assistants controlling the music.
Yeah,
what about if you're doing a smaller show where you don't have assistants?
Yeah, my commercial shows, I travel with two assistants.
Yeah,
I used to travel with two assistants in my previous show. One managing the props, and one solely my DJ.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of things, like some certain acts, maybe five tracks are involved in one act.
Mm.
Something like that. Yeah. And I like the kind of feeling that like, they know when to press. It's like a common DJ for a dinner and dance, the MC. They know when to hit this track, when to hit that track.
Yes, you need someone who knows who knows the cues to press the right track. Otherwise,
exactly.
The show's not going to work.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I suppose it would still work, but I mean, depending on how you want to produce the show.
Yeah.
Right.
But then you've got to factor in the cost, of course. Then when you hire two assistants,
you've
got to charge more for your show, and sometimes the client won't want to pay that much, and it's tricky.
Yeah, but for me, I'm not just working on show business, I'm also a big businessman, so I do calculate in terms of costs involved.
Yeah.
And that's why my show fee is that much. Because sometimes, I'm sure you may know, Singapore local event organizers, they will just say, can cheaper?
Yeah, all the time, every country.
Perhaps, I think probably worldwide, probably.
Yes.
It was the middle
so man. What do you say if they say, can it be cheaper?
At this time, at this point, in the past years, of course, certain event organizers, of course, there are pros and cons, there are good and bad event organizers, But nowadays, I stick to the price. I have a price list.
You stick to it.
I tell them that there's a reason why the price is like that.
Ah, I tell them, yeah.
Yeah, so...
You tell them, I have two assistants, I have big no, I, to transport.
I don't really have to say this now. Mm. In fact, now if for my corporate shows, and I just need one assistant. There's a reason also, because I'm not carrying any more flight cases.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of like a nice, just a one table on top here actually plays most of the act, and then the other things that come up on stage is just nice for the DJ who helped me to
play. How do you get it on and off stage? Your assistant will put it on stage for you, and you can start quite quickly?
No, in the past, my shows were... There's at any time, there will be only be one thing on stage, and that's that act. That's
right,
it.
That's right.
So my show is produced as such that only... So people won't see a very messy stage, like, wow, so many props. So but then again, for Alex Tan, for Alex, even till today, all his props are on stage. So his stage is all matching at the back.
Yeah.
And then it's depending on each opinion. His opinion is that, my opinion is I want the whole stage to be empty, just one thing that I'm doing.
That does mean that you can start the show quite quickly as well, and you can also get off stage quite quickly, because when you finish, you've only got one item on stage, so you can get off quite quickly, which is sometimes very important.
No, unless if I'm doing the Big Illusions, then the Big Illusions must be on stage first, the side,
That's
but
true.
It has been a few years since I think the last time I did my Illusion show was before I did a biopsy.
Yeah.
And that show is for, I'm not sure, do you know Showbiz? Do you remember Brandon, Showbiz?
Yes.
Yeah, Brandon, that was his show. And I told him that, he knows I'm going to go for surgery, the biopsy. That's why that show, I got official photographer. Mm. So she was there, the photographer was there just for, it's like, I'm kind of thinking that after surgery, I don't want to do Illusions anymore. So,
maybe.
Because she was taking photos, some official photos.
Mm.
Yeah. For that event,
You say that you talk more now. Well, you started off without talking on stage, and then gradually
I don't talk so much in my show.
And then gradually you began to talk more on your show. What kind of microphone holder do you use? I see that you can take it on and off very easily.
Yes, I use Dave Lloyd mic holder.
How do you spell that? Dave
Lloyd. DAVE.
Yeah.
LORD.
There you go, mic holder.
Yeah, in fact, his website is called thecomedymagicshop.com.
There you go. Brilliant. Another great tip. Yeah, I mean, when I began in the mid-90s in Singapore, there wasn't much internet. There weren't many other performers. I don't know how I came up with my microphone holder, but I just figured I needed something hands-free. I didn't want to use a headset because I had too many hats and costume changes and things. So I wanted to use the regular wireless handheld mic that I knew was working at the event. I needed some way of attaching it hands-free, so I just bent a clothes hanger, hanger, and I used that for years and years and years.
In the past, like Gordon Cole, I'm sure you know him.
Yeah.
Gordon, he just tied with balloons.
That's right, yeah.
That's just tied with balloons and stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes if I don't use this mic, also if I don't have anything, just balloons. Yeah, that's fine as well.
The problem with those ones is it's hard to get it in front of your actual mouth. It's a bit lower to your neck. Yeah. And often...
For the mic holder I use, it looks like I'm holding the mic.
I know, it's right in front of your mouth.
I can release and float the mic.
And you can take it on and off really easily.
Yeah, I just set it off. I usually put it on front stage.
There you are.
So then when I finish, I go down and pick it up.
Yeah.
But nowadays, when I work on like a pilot case, I hook it on the case.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Your costumes are always very stylish. Do you have them specially made?
No. In fact, I don't know when is it. I think it was since 2008. I don't make any more costumes.
Right.
Mine are all fashion clothes, fashion wear.
But how about finding the right pockets and things?
I rarely use pockets.
Right, there you go.
Because for me, when I do close-up show, during close-up show, I don't have put them in my pockets.
Jeremy Pei is just going back of his room.
I'm around with a case like this.
He's bringing around a handheld case. Okay.
Yeah, there's a case I carry and a table. So all my props are inside.
So you don't need pockets. Perfect.
I have basic pockets, like side pockets and all.
So you don't need any particular special costume requirements. You can buy a nice costume.
When I do an act in the opening, a bit of manipulation kind of act, I use pockets. I use the two inside pockets, each to hold a silk.
Yeah.
And the outside pocket to hold a silk too.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But that's pretty standard in most jackets, so easy to buy.
I don't need any fancy, secret pockets. Yeah. But nowadays, it's like I say, fashion wear. Fashion is actually one of my personal hobbies as well.
Ah. Yeah. Well, you always look pretty stylish to me when you're on stage.
Oh, thank you.
Singapore, if people don't know, outdoors it's very, very hot and very, very humid. Do you need a different costume for outdoors versus indoors in Singapore?
Correct.
You do,
definitely.
Yeah?
I don't wear a suit. No way. I wear a suit in outdoor. It will look like, wow, you're suffering.
Yes.
As people are watching you perform, they must be thinking, are you okay? We are wearing a suit.
Yeah. And how do you deal with sweat? Does it, if your hands get too slippy, or if the sweat's in your eyes, do you have any problems doing shows in very, very hot situations in Singapore?
Yeah, of course. In the past, I still wear the costumes and suit outside. Now I don't. I wear a single layer, I won't say jacket, but it's a single layer thing.
Mm.
It was a designer, an Italian designer once, and then inside I wear a t-shirt. But my t-shirt, the one I wear, it's a bit like a... there's some special designs on so in the past I used to be, do you know of this brand called Ed Hardy?
I don't know, no.
Ed Hardy is an American brand, okay. But Don Ed Hardy, he passed away. The designer Christian Artigo also passed away.
Oh.
There's no more Ed Hardy. When I went to America nowadays, no more. So now I stopped wearing the clothes because that clothes have lost sparkles and everything.
Oh.
I kind of started to think also now my fashion thoughts are a bit different. So I wear something totally different as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wear something of black and gold and all. I mean,
yes.
It looks very more fashion on stage.
Yes, I remember. And it's important to look, to stand out and look classy, have some kind of look on stage. It says, this guy's a performer, not just a member of the public.
Correct, of course.
What other ways have you explored to bring in money?
In 2006, I started my company, Redefine Magic Private Limited. It's actually a business. It's not really just a magician doing magic shows. So there are many, many channels in terms of income. Of course, show business is one. Magic products-wise, I have imports from around the world, plus I have my brand of products. And I had a department in my company called Personal Magic Coach in the past whereby I coach individual magicians.
Yes.
That people really come. I'm not a mentor, I'm a coach. I want them to know because I don't know why. It's not really like a mentor while your disciple, the kind of, no, I said I'm just a coach to motivate people. Yeah. So there's something that I say about, my memory is very bad now because of the surgery.
Yeah.
Serious. Yeah, so I write them people something that represents my personal magic coach. It says that mentoring is a brain to pick and ear to listen as well as to push in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm doing to the magicians. I'm not telling the magician, you have to do it this way. I'm your mentor, you must do it this way.
Yeah.
I don't do that. So I did that for a few years until my surgery.
Right.
Because I don't think my mind can think that proper.
Right.
Yeah, so now Personal Magic Coach becoming a private group, just on social media, whereby I literally donate everything that's in my mind, my routines, my thoughts, and write out. In fact, The 60-Year-Old Magician was supposed to be a book.
Yes.
But actually, I didn't publish that book, so it becomes a blog.
A blog.
So I did publish a book, but my book is somewhere here. It's actually for magicians to talk about my history and all in terms of selling magic,
Personal Magic Shopper.
It's called Personal Magic Shopper.
Yeah,
personalmagicshopper.com, and that will show you the book content and the book and all. Yeah.
Wow, so, that's amazing. So you've sold magic products. You have a book, Personal Magic Shopper, which people can purchase online.
Yeah, actually, 2007, I was into internet marketing.
Huh.
I paid money to learn internet marketing.
Yeah.
And back then, I won't say it's illegal, because I was using that strategy to sell magic DVDs.
Mm.
It's a strategy. So one website, like ultimatefiremagic.com.
Yeah.
It was a DVD that allowed you to say internet marketing ways to in terms of the advertisement, buying advertisement here, what I learned. So a lot of my products have actually circulated worldwide too.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Maybe you walk past Hong Kong Magic Shop, you may see one
Jerry
paper.
Yeah.
And you know Alan Wong, right? From Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I worked with Alan. We produced a product together a few years ago. 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now we are working on one more. There's one more thing to come up, I think.
Wow. Gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great, because it's hard to rely on just one source of income.
You're right.
Because if you just rely on performing on stage, and for some reason you can't perform on stage, or you don't get the bookings dry up, you need other sources, so always spread your net wide.
Yeah, but not just magic, I also do other things. In the past, I mean, I don't talk about what I have tried, but a lot of things, it may not pass. Like, once I worked with Alex, we were selling magic toys.
Yes.
The brand is called Magic 101. That wasn't a very successful business, but it's not a very big loss. In 2012, me and my wife, we went into what we call mobile accessories.
Right.
And like those kind of crystals design, and we also went to, in the one business regarding t-shirts. When I was in Taiwan, I buy a lot of t-shirts.
You tried everything.
The fact is that t-shirts, one design has four colors and five sizes.
Right.
So think about it, just one design, four colors, five sizes, and each size, each color you buy like five, wow, it's so bulky.
Yes.
And it's very tough. I sold all this business away pretty much at like a giveaway price. Like $288, I sold it all to friends and all. Because, you know, they're just taking up space at home. So at the end of the day, it's the same thing as what happened to my dad in the past. When my dad passed away, of course, we got to know he has seven companies. Okay, of the seven companies, six companies are losing money.
Right.
It's only his first company called the Leong Electrical and Plumbing Engineering. That is the one that makes money.
Yes.
So that is the one that saved all the rest of the companies. There's a story of BreadTalk. I'm sure you know BreadTalk, right?
Yes.
I don't know if Hong Kong has it, but I just returned from China. Beside my hotel has BreadTalk also. I heard that BreadTalk is not profiting.
Okay, BreadTalk is a bakery place.
Bakery, yes, yeah. Bakery. But it's meaning that the BreadTalk is the whole company. I'm not sure it is, but I heard before. It's the name of the big empire is BreadTalk, but the BreadTalk source of the bread, they are not profiting much. Huh. But what's profiting is they have Food Republic, they have all the other significant restaurants and everything. Wow, those are massive profits, probably. So, but you can't give up BreadTalk.
What? Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, now you see, I've a bit forgotten. Now my brain.
No, it's okay. What you're saying?
We were
talking about alternative sources of income. And how, there's various examples that people have tried.
I'm a bit more thankful now that I bought a condominium, actually. I'm staying with my mom. The HDB flat is my mom's.
Mm.
But I bought a condominium that year before I got hit.
Oh, right. Just in time.
Yeah. Before I got hit, but they are still building. In fact, it's just across the road here. Mm. So I got to see the building that I purchased build up.
Yeah.
Now it's just rented, so. Well, I get stable income from the rental.
Yes, I agree.
Although
rental.
My company is a private limited company, I'm the owner, but I get monthly salary. The fact that my salary dropped now because I'm not really doing much shows. But there are some shows, like I say, this whole year, maybe less than counting on one hand or two hands. Unlike in the past, you know, when you're in Singapore, sometimes it's crazy, you know, 1 month you could do 30, 40 shows.
Yes.
You know, one day you will run 4, 5, 6
shows.
Yes,
I remember those days.
Does it happen in Hong Kong?
Hong Kong was similar. Hong Kong, there was a boom, maybe 1995 to about 2000, similar to Singapore. There was a time, and that's one of the purposes. That's one of the purposes of my website, is to talk about that time. There was a time. It's not there anymore. When a performer in places like Hong Kong and Singapore would end up doing five or six shows sometimes in one day, racing around the country.
Yeah.
Those days are not here anymore in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, the biggest market at the moment is birthday parties, and that's been the same for 10 years in Hong Kong.
Mm.
I still get a lot of shows at Halloween, at Christmas, Chinese New Year. Yes. All right, tell me about something I don't know much about. Magicians are always entering competitions. You've entered lots of competitions.
Yeah.
I hate competitions. How come you've entered so many?
Yeah, the fact that now I don't know why I do so much, because now I'm a judge of competitions. it's a personal goal for me.
Yeah.
It's a personal goal. But for me, what I benefit from contests, we don't talk about awards and all, is actually through a competition, if we are there to network, and then we are magicians coming together to grow together.
Yes.
Seriously, through magic competition, I got to know a lot of close friends and all.
I agree. That's what I tell people. If you enter a competition, Don't go there to try and win. Go just there to the meet award. People.
Correct. And not only you meet people that way, but off stage there are people watching you.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that they will give you a chance and all, but I mean for people like some like I mentioned about Adam Wong just now to you mm-hmm. in Hong Kong, I got to meet him because in 1999 in Hong Kong the convention, it was after I performed, I competed in the close-up competition, I walked out. I think maybe he likes my act, he came to say hi and all. And then he's the one who showed me that a rubber band turned into the star. You see, he told me that I'm one of the first person to... I'm one of the first person who saw the Stargazer trick.
Ah.
Today I still perform it. So, because of that, now we are still great brothers
yes.
till today.
Yes.
So, and it was because of competitions... I got to know a lot of magicians and all, and I received a lot of opportunities. It was because of Thailand 2002
yeah.
that I got to go to Japan,
yes.
and then because of this, then I got to go to this place and that place.
Yes, I agree. Like I said.
And we need credentials
mm.
and international performance as much that in 2010 I get to perform in the Magic Castle in Los Angeles.
Yay, Magic
if I
Castle.
Don't do anything like this, what, you think Magic Castle want me there?
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think competitions... It's not actually about winning, it's about...
Yes, it's not about winning.
The opportunity is to go there and meet people who have the same passion as you, and you will find more opportunities, and you will network, and you will
yep.
grow that way. Yes.
Right.
And but in particular, I think magicians in particular,
yep.
all over the world there are magic associations, magic communities, magic competitions, and
yep.
there is a whole network, I think, for magicians. I'm not a magician... So can you tell me, I'm a non-magician.
Yeah.
So...
But you are a magician.
Well, I do some magic in my shows. But can you tell me about the magic community?
Yeah.
It is pretty much worldwide, isn't it?
Yes, you're right. For example, do you know International Brotherhood of Magicians?
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah. International Brotherhood of Magicians, there are like clubs in every city in the
yeah.
world, I think. A few hundred IBM... They have the, like Singapore is ring 115, they have ring number 1, ring number 2, ring number 3.
Yeah.
And every year there's the main convention of IBM in different cities of America. In 2010 I went as well, I competed in a contest as well. That was at San Diego.
Mm.
That's 2010. And then, in England, also in 2003 I was guest performer of the IBM British Ring Convention, which
wow.
is in England. It's about England. And then every year, they also have one convention, a big convention.
Mm. Oh, yeah, conventions. So you go to a convention, and you're competing, and maybe you're also running a booth, selling things. Do you actually get to see
I tell you what happened, for example. I tell you the worst of what. In 2010, I was at IBM.
Yeah.
I was competing close-up.
Yeah.
I was competing stage, and I have a dealer's booth.
Oh my god.
And before that, I was performing 21 shows in the Magic Castle. And after that, in Vegas,
too much.
I had this Jeff McGrath's Underground, which I'm performing also. So I'm carrying already a lot of luggage.
Yeah.
So, it was very challenging, because for close-up contests, we have to perform 7 times. That alone is very tough, because my act involved with me appearing a glass of wine. So, when I get to another room, I have to prepare the wine again and again, 7 times. And there was a very interesting story that happens that time. For the stage contest. The stage contest, there are about 30 over competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about in IBM, all these, they have to audition.
Mm.
You will audition in an open contest from morning 7 a.m. till about 12 p.m.
Yeah.
Everyone go out to do their act. And only 6 acts will be selected to go to a gold medal show. The gold medal show happens in the theatre. There's a proper MC. And then these 6 people will compete there. And then to win the prize. There's no first, second, third prize. There are 2 prizes, which mean first prize, second prize. They call it the gold medal.
Mm.
And the second one, they call it the award of merit. Okay?
Mm.
So this is a very interesting story. Yeah? I am like the 5th or 6th act.
Yeah.
So I have to be there like maybe what, 6:30 a.m. Right? So set up and all, and then the first one go up, and when I went up, this thing happened. Okay, this is the truth. I started with a candle, it changes into a fire torch, and it changes into 2 magicians' canes.
Yes.
Wow. And after that, when 2 canes appear, there was no light. there was no spotlight, there was no light.
Oh.
Just a very dim light on top. So I continued to do my act. And as I do my act, audiences are shouting, "We cannot see you."
Oh no.
Okay, so I stopped. I looked to the side stage, telling the stage manager, "Can we stop the act?
Yeah.
Or restart?" He was kicking me out. I said, "No, continue, continue." And I'm standing at the side, suddenly the lights come on. And then the audience were cheering.
Yeah.
Okay, but I was very mad. Because the fact that the music, the timing is off, and then I'm like, well, I mean, I came all the way from Singapore, now I'm in San Diego, this thing happened.
Yeah.
And one thing happened, I was a bit mad, maybe the emotion. I knocked down my table. Okay, after knockdown, I bring it up, but the table, it was messy, the floor was messy.
Yeah.
So what happened was that I picked it up and I finished my act. And people were clapping, like maybe an ovation and what. I went back to them, I was so mad at them. I say, how did this happen? Wow, there was no light in my show. I tell them, I ask for this thing from that. I say, can I do my act again?
Yeah.
They say in the history of IBN contest, there's no such things happening or letting a contestant go on again. I say, come on, this is not my fault. There was no light in my show. So they say, we can only decide at the last three contestants to see where we have enough time.
Yeah.
So I reset my prop. I was sitting there through 20 over performers. And they told me this. Okay, Jeremy, you can do it again. So before I went on at the last one, they told the judges, this contestant is all, well, please cancel the points that you give him. He's going to do his act again.
Yes.
So I'll tell you what happens after that. Of course, a lot of magicians came to me, wow, Jeremy, the fact that you still finish your act that time when the table fall, for them, they say they would just walk off the stage. I went into the gold medal contest, and I won a award of merit, which was second prize.
Wow.
So
brilliant.
Wow. I feel it's an inspirational story, that kind of thing. It's like, you want to go for something, just don't give up. It's just something life that can relate to as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, things like the table fall, there are problems in life that could come, but just continue fighting for it. Yeah. To reach the end, but the end may not be the most perfect, but just to reach the end. Yeah.
Oh, Jeremy, brilliant talking to you. Such a good story.
Yeah.
I wish you all the best. All the best, Jeremy. It's so good to see you again.